Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where to D or not to D? That is the question. A poignant quote from Shakespeare's Darwin Hamlet. And to that I'd say, to D it is. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Alan Riley. Alan, welcome back to the show. Have you bought into purple and gold eggs and ham?
So we got Dr. Seuss, we got Shakespeare.
Hey.
You should have prepped me so I could, like, think of another literary hero. I'm buying ham to the moon.
Ham to the moon. So
moon's
you do...
over my hammy.
Nice. So you do like purple and gold eggs and ham, you am.
Sounds better than green. F green eggs and ham. We don't want none of those Boston breakfasts.
Indeed, indeed. And so, Alan, we've got actual tangible basketball to talk about today. What a refreshing change.
Love those tangible balls.
Love those tangible balls, indeed. And while the Lakers are currently 0-2 in the preseason at the time of this recording, it actually sort of seems like a promising 0-2 start, if that can even be said after a 30-point preseason loss to the Kings. But it can be said. And I just said it, damn it. So before we get to talking more about what we've seen thus far from the Lakers in this early preseason stretch, if we could please ask you guys to rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app, that would be amazing. More so, if you haven't yet checked out our podcast channel on Spotify, if you could also please just tap the 5-star button at the top of our page there, we would also be eternally grateful. We're still trying to get to 55 stars on Spotify before the season ends. I believe we're at 45, 46. So please help us out in that venture if you appreciate what we've been doing, because all you get on this podcast are lessons and wisdom, as Darvin Ham would say. Lessons, wisdom, and litness, I should say. All right, with that said, Alan, let's get into it. In general, what has struck out to you thus far, for better or for worse, about what you've seen about this new group, this new iteration of the Lakers under Darvin Ham? And let's, before we get into like breaking down like the offensive end, the defensive end, you can get into either of those, but let's just do like a general vibe check. And I want to caveat everything by saying that, you know, for me, last night's game was a lot of fun to watch, you know? And I'm trying to compartmentalize the fact that, yes, the Lakers look a lot better, but I feel like I'm saying that in comparison to what we saw last year, like the train wreck that we saw last year. And I just want to recognize that there's a lot going on in a vacuum that is objectively exciting and promising, but at the same time, acknowledge that when everything is under the vacuum and prism of what we just underwent last year, it's easy to get swept up in projecting this team out to be like, oh, they're a playoff contender if they just do A, B, and C, right? Because at the end of the day, what does this team actually look like outside of the vacuum of last year? Against other teams with more cohesion than us this year? Against other teams that are getting back key pieces and players like Jamal Murray and Kevin Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. Or the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George, et cetera, et cetera. And there are, I know a lot of dysfunction, chemistry dysfunction going on around the leagues, surprisingly, especially in the Western Conference with the Suns and the Warriors. So that should help the Lakers out. But yeah, I just wanted to keep that in mind as I'm watching these games of like sort of keeping things into perspective, because at the end of the day, Russ is still on this roster. The roster is still imbalanced. And so taking a step back, I also want to keep in mind, how does this actually look? How will this team actually look like compared to these other Western Conference powerhouses? And is being better than last year good enough? I think is the main question that I want to, you know, kind of highlight for everybody. But with that said, what is your vibe check on, like, was it refreshing to you to see certain things?
Yes, it was refreshing. If you just look at it for what it is, the fact that I had a good time watching it, I wasn't very irritated, you know, at times, sure, of course, because it's going to happen in every single game that you watch. No one's going to execute at 100%. But there were many more like, ooh, that was nice. Like, oh, I like that. More smiling, more laughing, just more joy abounding in general is what my experience was, especially the game against Phoenix. Yeah. So I think that for, again, the overall like vibe check, right? The team looks more cohesive, I would say. The team looks and is a lot younger. The team is running a lot. And yeah, we'll get into like that sort of thing. But just in general, it's like a fun, more fun brand of basketball to watch. Thomas Bryant got a T for stepping onto the court because he was too happy, you know? And Russ, like, went over to center court with ice on his knees and was telling him, like, no, that's a ridiculous foul to assess. So, like, you see Russ hanging on LeBron and they're, like, laughing with each other. And you could plug in any player. It doesn't have to be Russ. It doesn't have to be LeBron. It could be anyone else, right, in the league. And when you see that type of, could call it camaraderie, right? Like, these guys are having fun with each other. That's always a good thing. So yeah, it's been fun to watch. There's been bright spots. There's been these little like moments that you could cling on to that aren't just like you can count them on less than one hand. So far, for what it is, so good.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, lo and behold, the things you want to do, like getting out into transition, work out a lot better when you have young, fresh legs who can actually run. Whoa, it's amazing, right? And if we're talking about vibe check, like you just mentioned, the vibes seem to be pretty positive, especially given the sort of interesting, awkward circumstances surrounding, you know, the team in terms of Russ knows what's going on, right? I mean, these guys aren't stupid, right? But in spite of that, the fact that these guys can take it for what it is as well, take it day by day and say, hey, right now we're a team and this is what we have and we're going to try our best. And I think that's the one thing I wanted to pinpoint. Like, there's a lot more trying everywhere, you know, in every sense of the word. It's not just, and when you add trying with fresh legs, things work out a lot better than trying and, oh, this dude's busted and can't really run anymore. You know what I mean? Because you can try all you want mentally, but as we saw from last year, if you're over the hill athletically, there's not much else you can do, right? So let's talk about what sort of stood out to you on the offensive end, because as we've been alluding to, the pace, they actually got the horses to run this year. But even outside of like pushing it into transition, in the half court offense, the ball movement and player motion is just so much more dynamic and apparent. And it seems like everything has more intent and purpose. Even when you see guys sort of ISOing, if they ISO on a certain possession, they're doing it in the first like 5 seconds, you know? And they're doing it with the intention of driving it into the paint and pitching it back out. You know, we've been talking about Darvin Ham and how he used to run this like motion offense with Bud in Atlanta and also in Milwaukee. Well, that system relied on guys kicking, driving and kicking out, and then guys on the perimeter swinging it to the next guy on the wing, and then that guy driving and kicking out. It's a constant motion so that you get that sort of yo-yo effect on offense where the defense actually starts to bend, and you do get these crevices in the defense where, oh, hey, LeBron James, of all people, is open for a layup. How did that happen? You know what I mean? It's because multiple guys knew that they had to do something with the ball, and they executed. So getting into their sets and motions a lot quicker within the first 8 seconds, initiating and engaging something, again, there's a lot more intentional movement from players that even in the half court, you're just like, wow, this is different from last year for sure. But what do you have to see on the offensive end of things?
Yeah, I kept finding myself looking at the shot clock, right? Once, like you said, we would actually get into our sets and our motions. And how many times last year would you look and it starts blinking red because it's like under 10 seconds or whatever? And offensively, we still did nothing. We did not attack. There was nothing aggressive about us. Whereas, yeah, like you said, right now, everything actually has a purpose. And it was so nice to see with 14 plus seconds, we had already like started to chip away at whatever the defense, right, was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And this is, yeah, this is game two of the preseason. And I think with a mostly brand new team, brand new personnel, aside from how horrible things looked last year, 2 weeks into the season, like, this is good stuff. And, you know, Darvin Ham said that he feels that the team is going to be able to pick up the system relatively quickly. and it seems like that's the case. I mean, brand new coach, brand new team, they already look like they're gelling. Things don't look terribly awkward when we're running out those, like, first and second units through the third quarter. So, I totally agree with what you said there.
Yeah, and it's just been fun to actually watch a team that wants to play fast actually execute it by prioritizing defense first. And then all of a sudden, like within the first 2 seconds, all those guys are down the court. I think you remember this play where LeBron James gets the rebound on the baseline in the second quarter of last night, and all the other four guys are already at midcourt sprinting. And then a second later, LeBron James just lobs it to Wenyen Gabriel for the jam. And what's funny is JTA was... Yeah. Running level to Wenyen, so it could have been either of them.
Absolutely. I love that. I love it.
I know. It's crazy. It's so much fun.
You know what else was nice about that? They weren't running out to the three-point line. And I know Stu and Billy Matt kept saying it over and over and over, right? But, dude, it's like there were multiple fast breaks like that, right? It's like a three-on-two break. Austin Reeves seemed like he was in the middle of a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And, like, the one that comes to mind, it's so simple. It's Austin Reeves, Pat Bev, LeBron both on the wing. Austin Reeves gets into the paint, Chris Paul commits, passes it to LeBron, easy layup. And, like, that's classic vintage basketball that you learn when you're in kindergarten, yeah, running three-man weave, whatever, right? But modern NBA, you don't really see that. Pat Bev would be running to the corner or something, and then you kick it out there, which is ridiculous. So we saw that multiple times last night, and I don't know, the fact that, at least for me, it elicited such a, like, oh my god, that was beautiful response, feels ironic, right? Like, that's just what it should be. That's the smart thing to right. do. Let's stop trying to get 3 points, whatever. But anyway, you wouldn't see much of that last year, ironically, with the lack of three-point shooting that we had. So that was another thing that was fun to watch.
Well, I think what you're getting to is they know their strengths right now. I think if they actually had legitimate three-point shooters, you could have that versatility of having some guys flare out. But in lieu of that, because we don't have those shooters yet, they're like, well, let's just all rampage down, you know, let's all stampede down the lane and then make the defense pick or choose, you know. So let's move on to the defensive end, because this directly correlates to our transition play. And so the one thing, Alan, that kind of blew my mind, and I do want to caveat this again by saying, if Frank Vogel had these same horses, I'm sure we would be lauding and praising what Frank Vogel was able to do with them. It's just, unfortunately, Darvin Ham was gifted with a much more competent roster of dudes who can do stuff. But having said that, the thing that stood out to me the most was the help defense. I'm not even just talking about the one-on-one primary defender, but everybody seemed aware of what was going on, and they knew when to jump in and tag your man. Tag you, man. You know, like, I'm telling you, there's this instance too where anytime anybody gets into the paint, Alan, you see all four other guys almost pulsating in and out to try and step in to crowd that same player. And so by the time, if let's say the primary defender gets beat, it doesn't matter, because multiple guys have already keep doing that step in, step out thing, so that they're helping. There's already default help there. You know what I mean? And if you watch a lot of the opposing team's shot attempts, you don't normally see just one hand contesting. You typically see another hand in the periphery trying to bother the shot as well. And dudes off ball, off the primary initiator, are really making an effort to not only contest, but send multiple guys to harass, disrupt, and contest. It's almost like, if I could describe it, it's almost like the Lakers had a moving double team or zone defense out there. And it feels like Ham wants the opponent, the ball handler, to feel like there's always a defender behind or around him. Like moving, like a, again, a moving double team, so that even if he is just being defended one-on-one, it's in the back of his head that it's like, oh, wait, is someone going to come out, you know, come from the blind side and block me? Because that happened a couple of times, whether it was, you know, JTA holding his ground on Ayton and then Pat Bev comes out and swats the ball, right? Or Damian Jones all of a sudden on the weak side swats the ball. Or Austin Reeves gets beat, but because Damian Jones is there to sort of corral Chris Paul, he can come back into the play and swat Chris Paul with his left hand. I saw a lot of that that I didn't see last year, where I was like, man, these guys are helping the helper. There is always a help defender there in case someone gets beat. And everybody seems so much more engaged. And I think that also starts with, obviously, Darvin Ham's principle of getting to that primary ball handler at the very start of a possession, because you see, you know, Pat Bev guarding up on Chris Paul from the full court already before they've even crossed the half court line. And by that point, you've already like sort of eaten up, you know, 4 or 5 seconds, and Chris Paul's like, this is annoying, you know?
Well, yeah, because what happens, right, when Pat Bev picks him up, like, just below the logo at center court, like, Chris Paul needs help, right? So someone's got to come over for that pass, and that's when now you've, like, collapsed their offense, right? You've, like, condensed the court, you've shrunk it, so that's why it is easier to send that help over. You're not allowing him all this space to, like, just get to his freaking spot, because you're old and you can't keep up and you don't want to get beat off the dribble, right?
Yeah. And then on top of it, transition defense, because, you know, Darvin Ham highlighted during when he was first hired that they want to get back in transition when another team is trying to run. And you saw multiple possessions where, dude, LeBron is running back along with JTA. And when, like, these long full court passes are being heaved to, like, a rim runner like Ayton, they're actively trying to swat the ball, you know? There's just so much more, again, activity going on either in the half court or in transition. So what did you see from the defensive end?
Yeah, I mean, the question, right, is like, well, why weren't we doing it last year, if we want to harken back to that? I mean, it's like so many reasons. Like, old is number one, so almost like can't do it. Lack of trust. I mean, how many times the guys say, like, we got to trust each other? And it is pretty cliche. But, you know, last year, like, they didn't trust each other to tag their man, to rotate, to, like, have that weak side defense, right, come over and step in. We're just trying to, like, make individual plays, whatever the case may be. But now I think if you have that trust, everything, like, the defense is on a string, like, that really makes a lot of sense. Now, if you have the appropriate personnel, whether that's in terms of athleticness, youngness, giftedness, but also IQ. I mean, like, what's Juan Toscano-Anderson, you know, all these vets right now who, even like Damian Jones, I mean, he's young, right? But compared to DeAndre Jordan, right? Like, come on. If I'm a perimeter defender and I have him behind me, like you said before, if I'm Austin Reeves and I get off, beat off the dribble, like, it's totally fine. So I do think that there's so many variables at play here that are helping us. And then, sure, like the scheme, however the defense is being taught right now, whatever principles that we're following, I don't know, like, maybe they are better than last year's, but then Frank was obviously, like, we're a top defense in the league. So it's difficult to pinpoint, but I think what we can safely say, like you said, is the activity, the engagement, and just things like making sense has been really great to watch. You know, Phoenix is a good team. Like, they have a lot of experience with each other. They played their starters last night, like, a good amount of minutes. And the fact that we held them to, what, 25, 26 points in the first quarter or something like that, and we put up a lot more, you can see that interconnectedness.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is you sense the buy-in there, at least at the start, right? And I think that's the biggest part of everything. When Darvin Ham puts that accountability on everybody and says, hey, you're not going to get minutes unless you're playing defense, so far through two games, again, it's just two games, but so far it's been apparent. And even with Russell Westbrook, I mean, you're not going to change Russell Westbrook. He's still going to fall asleep off ball, but at least he is trying to fight over screens, right? He is staying engaged. He is, like, diving onto the floor, et cetera, because you're going to look like a fool when everybody, when the other four players around you are doing that. You know what I mean? And there are still times where he's just standing there off ball, but you know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There are a couple moments, man, where I'm like, are you kidding me right now? You let, what's his name, get another offensive rebound from the deep corner.
Right. But again, when it's Alan, when they look at this in the film room and there's only one play.
Patrick Beverley is going to like throw his shoe at Russell Westbrook's head in the film room when this happens, you know?
So, I mean, again, just like, I love the accountability. I love that it's already sort of translating. We'll see what happens when we, you know, get into real gameplay and we're against like a team with multiple wings. But so far, so good. So let's take it to break first. And when we return, let's talk about some of the individual players and maybe some of the concerns and deficiencies that we've seen thus far.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we're back. Alan, let's talk about some weaknesses or deficiencies that you've seen from this team through two games. Obviously, in game one, they got blown out by 30 points, but when the starters were in and AD was actually playing, the starters, you know, held their own and they were up like 46-42 or whatever during the time that they were out there. And obviously, we're missing Lonnie Walker, Dennis Schroeder, Troy Brown Jr., et cetera, et cetera. But to me, and we don't have to go too deeply into this, but to me, and this was more apparent in game one, surprisingly, even though we didn't have AD in game two, but in spite of the activity and sort of hustle going on, I feel like defensive rebounding is still a big weakness for this team. And I said it in game one, but it's almost like you do have to have Damian Jones and Anthony Davis out there most possessions, because if you only have one big, like if Damian Jones is doing his job and protecting the rim so many times during the versus the Kings, like he'd get the block or he'd get the contest, but another Kings player would get the offensive rebound because our guys are too small and they can't box out, you know? So there, the size deficiency in spite of the activity is still apparent. And so that's something we're going to have to shore up personnel-wise via trade or guys just helping out each other more, boxing out better. But that's definitely like the biggest thing for me. And then obviously this is, you know, low hanging fruit, but shooting. Swider helped a lot in game one, obviously didn't have it game two. That's going to happen when you're an undrafted rookie. My question is what happens when Kendrick Nunn is not on fire from three, isn't going 4 of 7 from three, you know? Are we going back to that model where it's like, yeah, we just hope every new game someone else has it going? To me, that sounds very dicey, but yeah, those are my two main, you know, concerns. But what about you?
Yeah, those are really good. I definitely agree when it comes to the defensive rebounding, because you can't teach size, right? Wenyen Gabriel has been, I mean, I know right now we're talking about like, you know, stuff they could work on, but he is one of those players who you can rely on, yeah, to like, I think, bang down there. He has that like wiry, you know, strength, if you will, because he's not a big dude, but he knows how to fight for his positioning. And we really saw that against Sacramento. I was like super happy to see his level of activity and commitment. And he's like a different type of energy guy, if you will. And then with regards to shooting, yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, Pat Bev so far, I mean, he's like taking his shot when he sees it, you know, and he's knocking him down, which is great. When he sees the defense sagging off him, like Chris Paul was way below the 3-point line the yesterday, and he sees his opportunity, shoots it. But yeah, like we need more than one guy to be able to rely on. I feel like right now this is like very nitpicky specific, but like Juan Toscano-Anderson, when he's shooting his threes, I feel like he's drifting so far to the left. I don't get it. Like, he had one of those Russell Westbrook-style bank shots. And, like, the second he jumped up, his body just, like, like flew at a 45-degree angle to the left. And it's like,
come on, Chris Dent.
Go straight up and straight down. Like, what are you doing? It's just kind of odd. So, that being said, AD in the first game stroking it, knocked down two threes. Mm-hmm. We learned that his wrist was really bothering him last season. Like, we kind of knew there was, like, a wrist thing, but he didn't, like, complain about it. So, hopefully that's just, like, a tangible reason why his shooting was so abysmal last season. And then the other bit of low-hanging fruit is, I mean, we already kind of talked about Russ, and like we said, like, Russ will be Russ. It's just, it's very infuriating when he makes mistakes because it's he's so like, dude, you might as well not even be out there. And I guess what I'm looking for in the next game that he plays, whenever that is, it's almost like, let's just track him and let's see how many times he has these brain fart moments. And if on average every game he has like 3 to 5 or something, let's just hope game by game it becomes 2.5 to 3.5. 2 to 3.
Sure.
Instead of, you know, that's when you can tell, okay, the coaching, the accountability, whatever is actually working. If it's just plateauing the whole time, then, well, there you go. So we'll see.
And we're starting to see very quickly, because of almost the glut of guards that they've collected, and I think it was for the purpose of, one, either motivating Russ to play the right way, or two, you know, shipping Russ out, that there are a lot of capable guys here who can get the job done if Russ is still falling asleep off ball or is willing to take that risky pass or is willing to take that 3-point shot above the break for some reason. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. And that's not to say Russ hasn't bought in, because he has been very engaged and he has done some very positive things. But in the grand scheme of, like, what we're trying to do here, it's almost like, is it good enough or can we be better than this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
With that said, are there any plays that have stood out to you either offensively or defensively before we get into specific players?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the obvious ones. The lob, like we already mentioned, to Winnie Gabriel. The Pat Bev lob to JTA in the first game. LeBron's ridiculous.
The one where he almost threw it out of bounds.
Yeah, dude. And JTA got up there, like, above the box. Obviously, LeBron's chase down blocks. LeBron's, like, after the whistle, swatted out of bounds. I think game two was his revenge game from going 0-for-4 from the field and just being asked ridiculous questions like, oh my god, you didn't make a shot. And he's like, hey, whatever, I'm gonna go MVP mode right here, game two of the preseason. Yeah.
And he's like, here's my one-footed three-point shot to show you how serious I am. Oh, it went in. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, those I think are like the obvious flashy ones in terms of like more substantial plays, right? Like, that actually show some sort of cohesiveness. You talked about it earlier. This might be stealing yours right now. The ball movement, right? There was this one play yesterday where Kendrick Nunn, there's like a little two-man game with him and LeBron. Kendrick Nunn's in a lot of like pick and roll kind of actions mm-hmm. right now, which is so nice to see because he's capable of, yeah, making those decisions. But he had a little dime, right? Pocket pass. And then from there, swing, 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 all around the perimeter. And, yeah, like, more of that, please. That was, yes. I think, my favorite play of the preseason so far.
Is it the play where it was, like, LeBron dives, Nunn hits him, LeBron pitches it back out to Swider at the baseline, Cole swings it to Reeves on the wing, Reeves attacks with a hard closeout, or he attacks the closeout, then he finds LeBron for an easy lay-in on the baseline, where four guys essentially touch the ball in that sequence, and they got a bucket in 5 seconds of that happening.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, that was probably emblematic of driving and kicking and keeping the ball moving on the perimeter, where it's like the spacing was almost perfect because you're not just passing it around in the same spot. You know, it's not crowded. So it's like
the north, south, east, west, like that whole thing that we're going to keep hearing about, right?
Exactly. In lieu of not having shooting, how do you create the spacing? It's by driving and kicking, you know, moving all around the court. So that's exactly what they did on that play. And then the other play that I really liked was in game one, there was this very quick three-man game with Patrick Bev, LeBron James, and Thomas Bryant, where Pat Bev has the ball at the three-point line. Thomas Bryant sets a down screen for LeBron. LeBron flares out, gets the ball from Pat, and then TB flares out and rolls, and then LeBron hits him with like a perfect bounce pass for the layup, and not one dribble move was used in that three-man sequence, you know? So beautiful synergy that we're seeing happen, and it's very clear that, you know, you can tell when like a new team is constructed and they're going through the ABCs, 1-2-3s of like trying to be in the right spots and everything like that. And I think the guys are doing that. It's just that they're also executing at the same time. You can tell people are very aware of the spacing, both on the offensive end and the defensive end, of which positions and zones they should be in. I don't know if you caught this, but in the fourth quarter, Matt Ryan, who's been with the team for like 4 days, was telling Thomas Bryant, hey, move, get out of that spot. That's not where you're supposed to be. Indictment on Thomas Bryant, but just the fact that, like, okay, this is getting ingrained into these guys that they should be in certain spots, you know, and that's kind of encouraging to see and hear. So,
yeah.
Let's talk about standout players, Alan, and let's start with Kendrick Nunn, the myth. The legend Kendrick Nunn, but for all the right reasons of being mythic and legendary this season, because he's actually out on the court. 21 points in 19 minutes, 8 of 13 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3. I already thought he looked really good in the first game, turnovers aside, but I literally said this to myself, and this is hyperbolic, but I was like, this guy can do anything he wants to out on the court right now. He is so frisky out there with the ball. He looks so fluid, so agile and acrobatic. He had like two of those like scoop-de-doo switch hand layups last night. And then there's just a pep in his step, and he looks revitalized from like a year off basketball that he didn't expect to have, you know? And this is going to sound insane, but he kind of looked like Kyrie Irving out there, like poor man's Kyrie Irving with these layup packages and yo-yo dribble crossovers. And obviously the shot has been on point. So your thoughts on Kendrick Nunn?
Yeah. I mentioned it earlier. I really enjoy it when he's in a pick and roll action, right? And I think that when we have a strong roll man paired with him, he's also a really good distributor. I mean, you talked about how he's able to isolate. He's got a tight handle. You know, his footwork is really nifty. He had that one like little floater. I can't remember who was guarding on Phoenix, but they definitely had a size advantage over him. And he had like a reverse pivot, little head fake, pump fake, jab step, and then kind of like floated it up over the top. So there's like that aspect of his game where, like you said, he could get his own. But also, I feel like the chemistry between him and like a Damian Jones, him and a Thomas Bryant, obviously him and LeBron, shoot, him and AD, we haven't even seen that combo like that much. Mm-hmm. It's another playmaker, not just for himself, but for others. Takes a load off of LeBron for sure. When he's in there and say like Russ isn't or whatever, he's that guy, right? And he's more than just like microwave type of player, although he certainly feels that like Vernon Maxwell, you know, type of profile. So, gosh, I mean, yeah, we had him on the team all of last year, right? Technically, but it's like, this is like a new player on our team. I can't remember who it was, but they're like, he's a real NBA player. Like, I heard someone say that recently. And it's like, yes, he is substantial. He is legitimate. And that's a huge, huge addition for our team.
Dude, Kendrick Nunn is the type of guard who would typically kill the Lakers on the other end.
For sure. We're
like, who's that small guy running in and out and dribbling all over the place? And we can't seem to get a hold of him. And he's pulling up from the mid-range, from three. He's passing out to people. We don't know what he's doing on any given second.
If he was on Miami, he'd kill us. There was that one game we lost to the Heat on a Saturday evening a couple years ago. I think Alex Crusoe could have hit the game winner in that game or something. Right. But I remember Kendrick Nunn destroyed us in that game. Yeah.
He's just crafty as hell, you know? Let's move on to Austin Reeves. Point Reeves. The confidence, the aggression, the versatility. He looks like he's back in college, you know, his last 2 years where they pretty much gave him the ball and told him to initiate. And you know, sometimes it's reckless, sometimes it's wild, but for the most part, you're like, dude, this is a second-year player. He had 6 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, and you may look at that and say, that seems like outlier numbers, but then if you remember his triple-double game to end the season versus the Nuggets, 31 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists. My God, this dude is doing this without having his three-point shot set yet, you know what I mean? And you know that he can shoot, so... And then on the defensive end, he's still being scrappy as hell. He mentioned that he bulked up. You can see his strength there. This is why I kind of comped him to Kirk Heinrich, who coming out of the draft was supposed to be this playmaker, initiator, but someone who is also hard-nosed on defense, right, and can stay in front of his man. And, Alan, I haven't shared this comp yet, but when Austin Reeves ever gets his three-point shot to work, he kind of reminds me of Mike Dunleavy, because Mike Dunleavy was also sort of this, like a shorter Mike Dunleavy, because I think Mike Dunleavy was Mike Dunleavy Jr. I think he was like 6'7", 6'8", but like he also was a very scrappy hustle dude, but his main thing obviously was that he could space
totally
from the perimeter.
I like that.
I think that's something that Austin Reeves can do. And also they just kind of look and shoot similarly from the perimeter as well, not just because they're white. But what are your thoughts on what Austin Reeves has been doing? Because he literally was everywhere and the stats back that up.
Yeah, and I think you saw a lot of improvement from game one to game two from him, just for what that's worth. You know, he made such a difference in the game, all aspects of the game against Phoenix. Like you mentioned, he had a quintuple single, right? But it wasn't like 1-1-1 across the board. It was like close to double-double territory. Knock down a couple more shots, get to the free throw line, whatever. Now we're looking at almost a triple-double, right? With a lot of other stats as well. So I don't know if you listen to the post-game show interviews, but Pat Bev was talking about him, and he says that he wants to take Austin Reeves under his wing. He's like, that's like my guy. I love him. I want to teach him like so much. LeBron was talking about Austin, saying, I hope that he's in the league for a very, very long time. I mean, everybody's just like waxing poetically about him, and for good reason. And I think that like where he is going to really like flourish and thrive, we already know this based on the combinations last year in the lineups, like when he's out there with LeBron, which means that he's going to be out there with Anthony Davis. I mean, that's why he might start. We don't know. Like, he started the game yesterday. So it's interesting to see how Darvin Ham is kind of tinkering with the lineups. That being said, he can literally play with anybody. Like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So super impressed with what he's got. Hopefully that shot starts to fall. When he did shoot it, though, in, you know, second preseason game, there's more arc on the shot, you know, to throw out a favorite Stu Lance. There needs to be more arc. Last year, it was extremely flat, probably just like rookie legs, tired, not used to playing so many games. So the strength factor and all that kind of stuff, and just learning how to be an adult in the NBA, I think it'll come around.
Yeah, and he really sells that shot fake hard, huh? And it's almost like, Austin, stop giving yourself whiplash, bro. He's like, pump fake, and then he drives really hard into the lane for like, and he hit some of these shots, you know, that soft floater or that mid-range jump shot off 1 foot. I'm like, damn, dude, yeah, Austin Reeves is definitely a keeper. Talk to me about the Pat Bev effect, because I guess it's true. You hate him when he's on the other team, but you really do kind of love him when he's on your team, because the constant energy and pressure that he puts on the rest of the team to be at their best activity-wise at all moments is infectious. Him constantly yapping and showing other guys up, it is infectious. And, you know, he's been hitting his threes, he's playing off ball well, not complaining. He's keeping the engagement and momentum and hustle up on the court. So what are your thoughts on the Pat Bev effect?
I think my favorite moment so far, it has nothing to do with like basketball per se. Russ hit the 3-pointer in the corner, got fouled. Pat Bev walks over, daps him up, high five. And he like almost headbutted Russ when he was telling him like, you know, good shit or whatever. And it looked just like, if you had no context, if he was wearing a different jersey, it looked like he's getting in Russ's face, like trying to start some shit with him.
No, yeah.
Because totally. He was so in his face, like chest to chest. And I feel like, you know, Russ is like moody, right? Or Russ is very dynamic emotionally. He has those moments. He's like rocking the baby. He's like smiling. He's like, you know, laughing with the crowd or whatever. And then Russ has those moments where he's got that scowl. I feel like Pat Bev is like trying to like get into Russ's head and like encourage him actually. And it's just funny because visually it looks like when they're on opposing teams and he's like trying to start some crap with him. But other than that, which I think is like a huge thing though, I just really enjoyed his interview after the game last night because he's so sincere and genuine, and it isn't just coach speak cliches. Like, he really means it when he says, like, I know what my role is, and I'm here to, like, impact everybody's effort, their intensity, and their commitment on the court. And we can see, like, those ripple effects. He's leading by example. When he's bodying up Chris Paul at, like, you know, before the half-court line, he's like kind of getting his chest into him, and some of the fouls that he's drawing, like, yeah, I can get myself out of Laker mode and be like, yeah, that's bull. Like, that's not a foul, but whatever. Like, we're going to take it, you know? It's
you mean the one where he ran into Chris Paul's shoulder and then flopped on the ground? And
that
they were
pick.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that pick that Chris Paul said. And he, like, flung himself all over the place. I'm like, that's such BS. But
but you know that's exactly what Chris Paul would do to him. So why not,
absolutely,
you know, fight fire back with fire? So that's the veteran savviness of it all. You know, you take advantage of that anywhere that you can. And Pat Bev is, yeah, we're glad to have him on our team. Let's talk about Wenyen Gabriel. He's still on a non-guaranteed contract. And obviously, you know, when we had to let Stanley Johnson go, who, by the way, I'll still say I'd love to see Stanley Johnson on this team still. But given the logistics of what happened with the trade, yeah, we're seeing now why they decided to maybe keep Wenyen, because he is taller than Stanley and he's just been an energy bunny. He hasn't had his shot going for him, but that hasn't really seemed to matter because he's so active, agile. He's crashing the boards everywhere. Running the floor well is the most important part. And then on defense, he's like standing his ground against DeAndre Ayton. And I don't know what's going on with Ayton and, you know, him not wanting to be in Phoenix. He just looks kind of off. Like, not to say that our guys aren't the main reason why he's off, but I'll just add that caveat out there that maybe Ayton is not in his right frame of mind yet. But all I know is Wenyen was really giving him some fits down there. And most of all, it's just like he's kind of like a 6'9 Pat Bev.
Nice. I like it. Yeah, I agree. I kind of talked about it earlier, so, you know, I don't want to be redundant, but he does look really solid right now. He's doing all those little things. You're never going to fault him for a lack of effort, being disengaged, things like that. Yeah, he's a little undersized if we're relying on him, you know, to play up against, like, fours and fives. But, like you just said, there are moments where he's using all the length that he possibly has against DeAndre Ayton. And when he turns around for his little jump hook, and Wenyen is right there, you know, doing the best he can to deter it from about like 6 or 7 feet away from the basket. And then Ayton bricks it. I mean, yeah, for sure. You got to give a lot of credit to him for that. And it'll be interesting to see how many minutes he gets, you know, like what that rotation is going to look like, which units he's going to be rolling with, and things like that. But he is a valuable wing, without a doubt.
Alan, maybe we'll get to this later, but he looks a lot better than Thomas Bryant right now. I know we had a lot of high hopes for TB. May need to pump the brakes a little bit after. And it's just, again, it's just two games. But if you compare TB to Wenyen, it's almost like night and day. And you can tell that one guy, even though Thomas Bryant is still that energy dude and will always sort of bring the effort, he just seems like a dude who is still trying to work off the rust, even just mentally too. You know, the Matt Ryan thing kind of being a small piece of evidence to that. But really, he just seems the most sort of like trying to find his way. And if he can't get his jump shot going, it's kind of like, okay, what is your use out here? You know what I mean? But with that said, let's move on to Damian Jones, because while he has been a bit rusty offensively and his timing may be a little bit off catching these passes and whatnot, defensively, he has been as solid as you can get. He's this guy who on drop coverage is still containing a guy like Chris Paul while tagging his man on the roll. Like, he's this dude. He's like the defensive center anchor that we didn't have last year, almost Dwight-esque, right? And I feel like he's improved on this so much, but he's not biting on fakes. He's shuffling his feet, keeping himself planted, using verticality when that is needed. And obviously on the weak side, he's still blocking the hell out of shots and whatnot. But it's just so refreshing to have this big body in Damian Jones who, he's not doing the JaVale McGee thing where you can easily get him off of his feet and all of a sudden you're compromised, right? It's like he's just been very steady and solid in playing within the scheme of what Darvin Ham wants to do. Again, like the anchor where he's covering a lot of different zones just on his own while also being like a weak side block defender, and obviously he'll showcase his athleticism here and there. But yeah, what have you seen from Damian Jones?
Yeah, you're right. He isn't that like home run hitter on defense that a lot of guys try to be. The fact that, like you said, that he's just been very solid and grounded, like literally. AD even mentioned for himself, like, he's trying to break some of his defensive habits of stepping up, just trying to block every single shot. It's like, no, Darvin Ham is telling us to, like, stay back a little bit, right? So we're already seeing Damian Jones doing that. And I like what you said about him, like, containing, you know, on drop defensive coverages. I mean, how many times we get killed in the pick and roll almost for our entire lives as Laker fans going back to the late 90s. So having the versatility that he possesses where he is able to be that shot blocker as well, but just play sound defensive basketball is great. On the offensive end, like you said, yeah, his shot looks a little, I don't know, like, it's like out of rhythm and stuff like that's a little bit wonky, but that's okay. That's like cherry on top. We really don't need him much for that end of the offensive side. Like, he took that three-pointer. It's like, what are you doing? We don't need that at all, dude. If he can be more of a vertical, like, lob threat, I'll be interested to see some of that. But I think that you're starting to see some, like, semblances of chemistry as well, offensively with him and some other guys. So, he has looked good in terms of starting lineups and stuff like that. We will see. It's looking pretty good for him, though. We'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, he had that one pass to Russell Westbrook where he was almost at the half-court line where he bounced past it almost perfectly to Russell Westbrook in stride for the layup. And I was like, damn, that was a nice pass, you know? Let's talk about JTA. You know, he had that sick lob catch from Pat Bev where he was almost sailing out of bounds. Good thing he didn't hit his head. He had an even better game, too, I feel like, where he was being utilized in different ways. Like, in one sequence, he's guarding Devin Booker. The next sequence, he's playing center and guarding DeAndre Ayton in the paint and standing his ground. And I thought that JTA lineup, where you could interchangeably, I guess, say LeBron was playing the five, but he was stuck on Ayton. So I'm assuming you could probably consider JTA the five in that lineup. So there was that unit where it was him and LeBron as the front court. I thought that was a very interesting lineup because of the mobility and dynamic speed it gave us on both ends. You know, we were harassing them on the defensive end and making DeAndre Ayton annoyed in the paint. And then on the offensive end, like, JTA's initiating at the top of the key with LeBron James. They have that two-man screen roll thing going on. And then he even hit that three on the baseline and he was wide open because DeAndre Ayton was camped out in the paint because that's where he'd normally be guarding a traditional center. But, oh yeah, JTA is the center on this unit, you know? But yeah, overall, I liked his two-man game, and we predicted this, right? His two-man game with LeBron where he's setting the screen, he pops out, rolls to the basket, LeBron James hits him with a nice bounce pass for the lay-in. That synergy is just instantaneous. So what are your thoughts on JTA?
Yeah, the fact that LeBron's got some athletes on this team, we haven't even seen all the athletes because of injuries and whatnot, is great. And JT is one of those guys. I know we said it when we first signed him. I'm like, this dude's a lot bigger than I thought he was. Like, just watching him on Golden State, it didn't really, like, pop out to me. But and now as I'm seeing him, I'm like, this guy's got some good size. He, like you said, he can defend, like, five positions, quite frankly. And I think that defensively is where he's going to make his biggest impact with us. We don't need him to score a ton of points. But just like pretty much all the guys on our team now, he's another one who could run out in transition and, just be another threat, right? Just in terms of like attacking and putting pressure on the other defense. So I think his leadership too, like every interview that I've heard from him, right? Like we're getting to know these players' personalities too, which is a really fun part of, this time of year. And damn, like he's so intelligent, he's so thoughtful, and I feel like his leadership is gonna go a long ways with this team. Obviously he just won a championship, he's been surrounded by really great players, but he seems super genuine too. Like every single one of his answers, it means something, right? And if that's just how he communicates, I mean, to the media, you gotta think like, yeah, this is who he is. So another good locker room guy is a really great addition too.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. And you know, it's funny. You said he seems a lot like he has a lot more size. I actually thought he looked smaller than his listed 6'6", but because he's so sturdy and because he is a bowling ball of a player, it kind of doesn't matter. It's almost like Draymond Green, right? In reality, Draymond Green's like 6'7", but he's guarding centers and power forwards regardless on the daily, you know, and JTA has that versatility to play 1 through 5, maybe more 1 through 4-ish. But as last night showed, he can also play some 5 and hold his own. And it almost doesn't matter that he looks like he's 6'5" out on the court because he is built so sturdily. Let's talk about some of the rookies / G League guys, and mainly Cole Swider. His shooting in the first game, incredible. He pretty much carried over what he did in Summer League to preseason, and I was like, oh God, this guy just, he's not going to miss, right? And then, you know, game two kind of brought us back to reality, like, oh, yeah, that's right, he's a rookie, this is going to happen. But it's so surprising to see him miss that you're just like, and miss badly, right? Because so far we have never seen a bad, you know, Cole Swider shot for the most part. But even just him being out on the court, just to see the gravity that he sort of engenders, you're like, oh man, we gotta make a trade for some more shooters. If you just see this rookie, undrafted rookie, be able to have this effect on a defense. And he had this play in the first game where he pump faked at the 3-point line, stepped inside the line a little bit, took a dribble step back, got the defender flying, and calmly hit a mid-range J off his own dribble. And to me, that's like, that's a veteran move that a rookie dude who was unheralded coming out of college just pulled off, you know? And if you just watch him off ball, especially that first game, how much gravity he has and how much he moves around the court. I mentioned it on Twitter, but people are going to misconstrue what I say, but I called him the Lakers Cooper Kupp because he's running routes on the perimeter is what I'm talking about, you know? He's running routes, and everybody on the court who's a Laker and probably also who is a defender knows where Cole Swider is at all times. They are actively trying to find him. If a set breaks down, they're like, where's Cole Swider running to? He's our ultimate safety valve. So that's what I mean by Cooper Kupp. This dude is route running on the perimeter without the ball. And once you hit him, he gets a clean look at three. Bam, swish, it's over. You know what I mean? And then the one thing that I was impressed by game two was he was actually playing pretty solid defense. He was staying in front of his man better, contesting, and getting those almost like Marc Gasol blocks where it's more about the timing than it is, you know, athleticism. But yeah, what were your thoughts on Cole Swider?
Yeah, I was literally just going to talk about his defense and how he's able to stay in front of guys. And he's just a solid defender. Like, obviously, like, he's going to be sliding his feet, you know, as textbook as he possibly can. He's not trying to, like, cut the guy off. He's not going to go for a steal and gamble or do anything like that that's flashy. It's all, like, fundamentally sound. And he's able to go up. He's not worried about even, like, blocking the shots, just about contesting it. So that was a pleasant surprise because you would just expect, I guess, for, you know, whatever reasons, for him to just get beat off the dribble, no problem, to be, like, standing up vertically. So yeah, defensively, not something that I thought that we'd be talking about with him at all. On the offensive end, it's crazy too, because like he gets good looks for sure, and he's the one who's like freeing himself up as a result of all of that motion, but he also has like not good looks and he's still knocked it down, right? Like, yeah. And right in his freaking face. And yeah, he doesn't get a ton of separation off of like a step back or something just because like that's not his thing. But he gets just enough airspace where he can still get it off. He has the height, you know, of course that's going to help him. So yeah, I mean, I don't think your Cooper Kupp thing, like, I know why you're saying, like, oh, people are going to think because it's freaking Cooper Kupp. It's like MVP right. candidate, right? But no, in terms of the activity and things like that, absolutely makes sense. And if you are like a shooting guard, like that type of player, like that's what you have to do. Sorry, it's not just going to be catch and shoot with you standing still. And him being like formerly Villanova guy, you know, a lot of Villanova dudes are super smart. And then he was at Syracuse after that. But I think that the IQ is going to come in handy. Yeah, I thought it was interesting also, like last thing, to see him get some run in the first quarter yesterday with like four or 5 minutes or something like that left in the first. I was like, oh, damn, we're bringing him in now with this unit. It's not fourth quarter garbage time rookies, you know. So that was by design, by the coaching staff. Like, let's see what he could do in real life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when we were doing that episode where we were like, what's your favorite, like, two-man groupings or three-man tandems? After the fact, I was like, damn it, I should have said LeBron and Cole Swider. I just want to see what that looks like, you know, because it's so easy a pairing that it's like, I can't imagine it not working out, you know? To close this episode tangentially, or actually pretty similar to Cole Swider, I want to talk about Matt Ryan. Okay, I know this guy only played like 6 minutes. He was like 1-for-4 from three, but a lot of the same things we're saying about Cole Swider apply to Matt Ryan. And just contextualizing Matt Ryan, and maybe I've watched that offseason video too much, and I'm too super invested in Matt Ryan more than I should be.
Thank you for sending that. Everyone should watch that video.
Everyone should watch Offseason with Matt Ryan on YouTube, because he is such an endearing character. His family is such an endearing family. You can tell how hard he's worked. He was like a DoorDash dude and working at his grandpa's graveyard shift not too long ago.
Like at a cemetery. When we say graveyard shift, we don't mean like working at the grocery store at 3 a.m.
No, literal graveyard shift.
Yeah.
But dude, this guy came in and immediately started shooting. And for me, that's all I want to see out of a shooter. And the types of shots he was shooting too. And it's funny because there are slight differences between him and Cole Swider. Cole Swider, I feel like, always has a set form. I feel like Matt Ryan actually has a quicker release. And the one shot he made where Jay Huff gave him a screen and he curled off of it and the defender was right on his grill still and he drained it, even with his legs flailing and everything, I think that's like the sort of different dynamic that Matt Ryan brings, where it's like kind of more loosey-goosey and wild, but I like that out of a shooter, you know what I mean? And he gets that up really quickly. And the fact that he missed his first two or three threes and he was like, I'm still going to keep shooting, to me is very encouraging. And then to add on to it, you know, I want to talk about Dwayne Bacon, because he did look good. He did a lot of nice things off his own dribble. My only concession is he kind of reminds me of Mason Jones, a dude who likes to have the ball in his hands and likes to score. And Bacon did a good job approximating what Lonnie Walker would do once he plays, which is why I feel like if I had to choose between the two, I would like to keep Matt Ryan over Dwayne Bacon, even in our G League system, just because Matt Ryan has more potential as a pure, legit shooter off ball. And that's what we need. We don't need more on ball guys, to be honest with you. And Matt Ryan also, I don't know, maybe my eyes are deceiving me. He kind of looks tall. I know he's 6'6", 6'7", but he kind of looked even taller than Cole Swider. But yeah, what are your thoughts about Matt Ryan? And maybe you can, you know, bleed into your analysis of him with some Dwayne Bacon thoughts.
I just keep thinking of the former Atlanta Falcons quarterback every time you say Matt Ryan. Like,
yes, of course.
Like every single time. And I use Matt Ryan a lot in DraftKings over the last few years. But anyway, it's just funny, that name. So
he's playing tonight.
I know.
I mean, both Matt Ryans are.
It's a Spider-Man meme. Yeah, I agree. I like what you have to say about, like, between what our team's needs are. I thought Dwayne Bacon looked solid for sure. And you do bring up a good point in terms of, okay, so what happens when these other key additions to our team, like a Lonnie Walker the fourth, are here? Because right now we're seeing stuff that's like, this is literally what we've got, and this is why we're playing them. Hopefully Lonnie Walker plays tonight, but we need shooting desperately, you know, like you said, and we need like gun slinger shooters mm-hmm. who aren't going to hesitate. And it's not like they're going to be getting the most likely, you never know, but they're not getting 20 minutes or anything like that. You know, we're looking for a guy who's going to get spot minutes, a la we're going to go in the Wayback Machine, a Brian Shaw, a freaking Mike Penberthy or whatever. Like, they hit 1-3 in a game that matters, and that's, like, huge, mm-hmm. you know, or a Sasha Vujacic or whatever. We are severely lacking. Like you said, he even has a little bit of size. He's not one of those guards, you know, that we already have on the team. So I love the story, of course, and I think that could be something that surprises us. I mean, our team's done a good job in terms of surprising us with guys that just come out of nowhere like this and then end up being real contributors.
Yeah, I don't think he'll make the roster. He has an outside shot at maybe the two-way spot, but Scottie Pippen's look good as well. But I hope he plays for the South Bay Lakers this year, and we do have the option if we need to, if Cole Swider gets a standard contract, to, you know, swing Matt Ryan into that two-way spot, because there were those times in the fourth quarter where I was like, ooh, Cole Swider and Matt Ryan at the same time defensively could be an adventure, but doesn't matter. I mean, shooting-wise, holy crap, you know, like, there's so much spacing there and so much potential with both of these two route running. What's a good NFL comp for that? Like, Cooper Kupp and who else? What's another good wide receiver?
I mean,
Adam Thielen, because he's white.
I was just gonna say, you have to think of like two white guys though. Like, if anything, you need like a tight end and a wide receiver, right? Like,
oh, that's true. Yeah,
you know what I'm
yeah.
saying. So, Tyler Higbee's on the Rams. He's a pretty good pass catcher.
So oh, they Cup, dude, actually,
Tyler Higbee.
That is perfect.
There you go.
That is perfect. Those are the only two guys that Matt Stafford likes to pass to anyway.
I know,
so
exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. Get the ball to Allen Robinson. Come on. What are you doing?
Oh, man, that's so funny. All right, with that said, thank you guys for listening. That'll do it. We will catch you guys next time when more preseason games are played. And, yeah, there's something here, you know what I'm saying? There's some vision here. We see the vision somewhat. It's all about rounding out the rest of the roster and getting guys back healthy so we see a more complete picture. So with that said, Alan, I will catch you later.
Laters.
See ya.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.